Blog Talk Radio.
What determination, what ability, high flyer, he does it all. The Macho Man, Randy Savage, the new champion of the World Wrestling Federation.
Elizabeth, I love you.
What a woman and what a man. With his pride by his side, Macho Man, once again, he has the goal.
One of the great superstars and former world champions of all time, the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Katrina Sconcher.
Not too much.
Cool. Is our other co-host on the line yet?
Yes, he is.
All right, what's going on, Craig? How are you doing today?
Weird day today. Had a good day with my son and woke up to some weird news and actually got to break the news to Brian. Got him out of bed this morning. Just weird day all around.
Well, let's start with the happy news. Why don't you tell us about what was going on with you and your son first?
Well, as most of you know, Over the Limit is in Seattle this Sunday. And when the WWE comes to town, there is usually some meet and greets and wrestlers are in the area and whatnot. Well, just so happens that Rey Mysterio was literally five minutes down the road from me at doing a signing at a car show. And Cameron was home today. I was home today. So I loaded him into the car, drove down there about 45 minutes early. And there was maybe, I don't know, maybe 100 people in line because it was the middle of the day, number one. The kids are still in school. People are at work. It was just awesome. And got up there and had a couple words with Ray. He signed my WrestleMania program for me and the DVD for my
and,
son.
When's he going to be up? When's he going to be on the show?
When's he going to be on the show?
Yeah,
I didn't ask him. Anyway.
But he's no longer under contract. Even then, probably won't be on the show, but still.
Exactly. But anyway, he was super nice and pinched Cameron's cheeks. And well, he didn't pinch mine, but that's another story. But anyway, he was real stoked and shook hands with him. And I put his picture up on my Facebook page just a little bit ago, me and Cameron and Ray. So just a cool day, you know. My son summed up the day best when he said, "Dad, this is the best day ever." And
that's cool.
I thought that was really cool. So anyway, I had a good good day this morning. The start of the day, I should say.
Ray must have looked like a 5-year-old standing next to you.
Check out the picture on my Facebook page, that's all I'm gonna say. He's about as big as my 4-year-old.
Yeah, he is pretty small. But I guess we can get to the big news of the day, which is unfortunately, once again, seems like we have to do this every few weeks. We have to announce that another wrestler has passed away. This one wasn't like a young, early 21s, but it sounded like he was old or anything, and that's the passing of one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, one of the best performers of all time, and that's the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
Got the AP report from the Associated Press. If you want me to read it?
Yeah, go ahead and read that. Great.
Sure. It's from Atlanta. It says Randy Macho Man Savage, the professional wrestler known for his raspy voice and the sunglasses and bandanas he wore to the ring, and the young woman named Elizabeth, who often accompanied him, died in a car crash Friday in Florida. He was 58. A highway patrolman from Florida. A Florida Highway Patrol crash report said the former wrestler, whose legal name was Randy Mario Poffo, was driving his Jeep Wrangler when he lost control at 9:25 a.m. local time. The Jeep veered over the raised concrete median divider, crossed over the eastbound lane, and crashed head-on into a tree. The police said he may have suffered a medical event, in quotes, before the accident, but the report did not elaborate. And they said the officials would need to perform an autopsy to know for sure. The report said a woman in the vehicle identified as Barbara L. Poffo, 56, suffered minor injuries. The statement from the Connecticut-based World Wrestling Entertainment said the passenger was the wrestler's current wife. Both were wearing their seatbelts, according to the police report. It says Poffo will be greatly missed by the WWE and its fans, the statement said.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like, I don't know, just speculation on my part. Maybe the, wasn't so much the crash, but probably the heart attack that killed him.
More than likely, yeah. If his wife suffered, you know, minor injuries, I would guess that that was indeed the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if he's having a heart attack and then wrecking, I mean, that's just like, you know, your life flashing before your eyes. So, I mean, it's even more stress already added to the heart attack going on. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sounds kind of bad. And
as a tie-in to my meeting with Ray this afternoon, he was on a local Seattle radio station, and the guys from the BJ Shea Morning Show are, one of the guys is very competent in wrestling. He will be front and center at the pay-per-view this weekend, but they asked Ray what his dream match would be, and this was said no more than an hour before the statement came out that Randy was dead. Ray said that he would love to have a triple threat match with Ricky Steamboat and the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Well, that'd be one hell of a match.
And then an hour later, they broke the news on the radio, and I woke Brian up, and he's like, "You've got to be kidding me." So
this was a very different. This was a very different death. I mean, in my opinion, anyway.
But the
status of the guy that died. I mean, you know, you had your Benoit, Guerrero, Owen Hart, but he was at like a different level than those guys, you know, as being a star. It's just my opinion. You know, it's like one of your childhood heroes, you know, passing away from when you started watching wrestling.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was around from the moment I actually started watching wrestling. He's always been in my world.
I mean, just look at the play that his death has gotten today. I mean, everywhere.
Facebook. My Facebook is nothing but Randy Savage from hundreds and hundreds of people.
I mean, in the sports world, people are talking about it, you know, like movie stars are talking about it and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's all over the place.
I mean, it's not very often that, you know, local radio gets a story and runs with it. Brian was actually on Como, which is a news radio site here in Seattle. He was on for just a couple minutes this morning talking about it, and they, you know, it's a big thing.
I mean, it's like Hulk Hogan would pass away. It's kind of like that would happen, you know?
I'm sure to agree it'd be actually more, but I hear what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's probably the second famous wrestler, or like he's got to be in the, he's in the top five. I mean, he's just, the only people close would be Hogan, Andre, and Flair in the 80s, you know, so he's, you know, and then, I mean, he was just entrance. It's almost like he kind of took stuff out of like the luchadors in Mexico. I mean, his entrance was just so awesome, you know, he had the spectacular entrance 20 years before, you know, all the pyro and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, first time I saw him, you know, he has the flamboyancy and the way he does his promos and his wrestling style. I mean, how can you not be fascinated by fascinated by the guy, you know? Just off the way he presented himself, he was just so different than everybody else and just made everybody else just look normal, kind of, I guess.
Well, the way he always came off to me is he always came up to me like he was wired on coke. You know, I mean, his his promos were just so intense and out there, and he was just so intense. You know, you could see like the veins pop out, and you know, just and a very, very intense dude, like probably even more intense than Davey Richards.
I could see that, yeah. The intensity level then definitely weighed up with, you know, a Davey Richards now. I hear what you're saying.
He was one of those that was legitimately scary. He was like a Scott Steiner at times. You know, he could believe this man is crazy.
Right.
To an extent, I think he probably was, but, you know.
Well, even when I first started watching wrestling, you know, the biggest feud, you know, in the early days was him and George the Animal Steel over Elizabeth. And as cartoon and as ridiculous as that angle was, and, you know, George the Animal Steel being the cartoon character that he is with the green tongue and eating turnbuckles and things like that, there was still a believability there with Savage that he would actually murder this man if he could.
Even though, I think it was like 2 years, every time I watched Saturday Night's Main Event, they'd have a Randy Savage and George Steel match.
Yeah.
Some involving Elizabeth. It's just like
I think one of like the very first times I ever saw Savage was probably on one of those Pro Wrestling This Week, and he was working in Memphis, and you know, he was like one of the first guys I ever saw hit a pile driver onto a table.
You know, that's the exact first time that I ever saw Randy Savage. It's on the Lords of Pain VHS tape, and it's the only time they show him, and it's he gives Ricky Morton the pile driver on that big wooden thick table that's still kind of broke. And at that time, that was like groundbreaking.
That was a Lord of the Ring tape that I want to say Apter and Gordon Sully put out, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a really cool old video. If you guys can find that online, and I'm sure you can, check that out. Some of the footage is amazing.
Yeah, I got a copy.
Hey, we got a phone call. You want to take it?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm just barely turning on my computer here.
Okay. Area code 540. Who's this?
This is Seth Draken.
What's up, Seth?
Not a good day.
Not a good day. I hear you, brother.
Yeah, I was taking a nap, and then I wake up, and the first thing that says that... Hold on, phone.
Sorry, we didn't mean to interrupt your phone call by having a radio show.
Oh.
Thank you for clearing the air here.
Thanks,
kind of a somber time. You go ahead and take that phone call, brother.
Gotta be kidding.
Gotta love live radio.
Sorry about that.
No worries. So give us your thoughts on Savage. You know, what are your memories of him?
Well, here I was going to finish the story that I woke up from my nap. I went to look on the computer, and it said, honestly, it said, report Randy Savage in fatal car accident. I'm like, whoa, hopefully this is not true that Savage is dead. Like, maybe someone else is, but... And then it says, Randy Savage killed. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. That is, let me say that Savage was one of the guys I enjoyed more than Hogan.
Mm-hmm. I can totally see that. What are some of your memories of him in the ring? Like, what's one of your favorite matches of his?
Would probably easily be WrestleMania 3. WrestleMania 7 was awesome, too.
Yeah.
With him and Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And
he carried that match.
Yeah,
he carried that match. Warrior was a big stiff.
Yeah. I know. But yeah, and the ending was really something where he and Elizabeth reunited.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, even some of his time in WCW, towards the end, you know, his matches with Sting and, I can't remember if Katrina helped me here.
DDP?
The Starcade.
Yeah, he got DDP over. He made DDP
at
the bar.
And when they brought all the Japanese guys in for that one Starcade, he had an amazing match with, help me here.
Enzon.
Tenzon?
Yeah, Tenzon.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah, this is just really upsetting. Oh, I understand. Well, Seth, thank you for the phone call. Feel free to call back anytime when you're not bothered by other phone calls.
Well, yeah, sorry about that, honestly.
No worries,
also,
bro.
I did get a joke. Someone said that someone was corpsing up in heaven, so they sent for the man.
Very cool.
Bob
Evans posted a picture on his Facebook page of, you know, the pearly gates and the stairs leading up to the pearly gates, and
oh yeah,
there's the Macho Man. The Macho Man posed on the steps is pretty cool.
Well, I'll see you guys later.
All right, Thanks, have a good night.
You too.
Now let's go ahead and since we're going to talk about Macho Man. Let's talk about. I'm sure we haven't seen a whole lot of his early stuff. The earliest stuff that I'd seen of him would be the stuff from the Wrestling Gold DVDs, and they got him and Lanny Poffo, where they actually have the whole match with the Rock and Roll Express, where he does a pile driver, and another match with the Rock and Roll, and then matches against Lawler and then Austin Idol, and then I think he's even teaming with Lawler on one of them. But it's almost like watching a different person if you're thinking like of the later years. I mean, in his first run in WWE, I mean, he was still in great shape, but the stuff he was doing in Memphis, I mean, he was like flying in and out of the ring, you know, just like nothing, you know. It's no wonder his knees were all fucked up by the end, but I mean, he was like a jackrabbit. I mean, he just was so fast, just that spring, I mean, doing that axe bomber to the outside. I mean, all the time. I mean, he was just...
One of my favorite moves was when he would, like, grab somebody by the hair and clothesline them on the top rope while leaping over
yeah.
the top rope.
And neck him on the top rope. Phenomenal. You know, the dude was 6'2", 237 pounds, and was born in Columbus, Ohio in 1952. And he worked for WWF, WCW, and had a short run, if you remember this, in TNA. Savage held 20 championships during his wrestling career, 10-time world champion, a 2-time WWF champion, 4-time WCW heavyweight champion, a 3-time ICW world heavyweight champion, and a 1-time USWA unified world heavyweight championship.
It's amazing how impressive that sounds from the guys from back then, but it doesn't sound impressive today. You know, with guys you know, in the current state of wrestling, you know, when you talk about titles and stuff. I don't know.
Also, a 1-time WWF Intercontinental Champion, and he was also the winner of the 1987 King of the Ring and a 1995 WCW World War III winner.
That's an achievement, I guess. Well, he did win the title.
Yeah. Yeah.
So World War III, is that when they had like 100 dudes in the ring, in three rings?
It was a 63-ring, 60-battle royal that nobody could follow, and it was horrible every year they did it.
There was too many dudes, and it's like they should have put two announcers on every ring, but that would have added to the chaos. It was just absolutely ridiculous.
I do remember marking out a little bit because three of my favorites made it kind of far, and that was I was a big fan of the Disco Inferno and Alex Wright and Chavo mm-hmm. Guerrero, and they actually did pretty good, you know. But
well, you can watch Impact Wrestling next week and see Disco Inferno.
He's on next week?
Yes, he's doing a segment on the show.
Oh, how?
Wrestling Matters.
I saw last night. You know, he was also in Spider-Man 3, I think it was, and there was another
Spider-Man.
Movie I can't remember.
No, was it the first one?
My bad.
First one, he was Bonesaw McGraw.
He also was on one episode of Baywatch, excuse me, also on Arliss, The Weird Al Yankovic Show, Mad About You, Walker, Texas Ranger, and also on the Jeff Foxworthy Show a few times. And
I remember that when he was remember when Arliss was on Nitro? And they actually called him Arliss, like he was the real agent and wasn't Robert Wolf.
Yeah,
and they were doing a program
up,
with Randy Savage and Dennis Rodman.
Oh, I forgot about that.
In the infamous porta potty match at the Hog Wild Show, Road Wild Show that year or something, where he dumped him in the porta potty and dumped it over.
Jesus Christ.
I don't remember all the details on it, but he was actually a St. Louis Cardinal for a while.
Hold on, before we get to the baseball, I wanted to say you totally forgot and underplayed his greatest role in the most awesome thing he ever did as far as movie roles, and that is
okay.
His opening scene in what the hell is that movie with David Arquette?
Ready to Rumble?
In Ready to Rumble, the opening scene is the best part of that movie. He's fucking phenomenal. It's fucking awesome. I don't care what anybody says. I love the beginning of Ready to Rumble. When he's like, oh, yeah, tag me in. That was awesome.
He also did voices for, like, stuff on Cartoon Network, I think.
Who could forget Slim Jim?
Oh, God.
Yeah, no kidding. But like you were saying,
Slim Jim's on the map.
He actually played for Cincinnati, and he had like the White Sox, and I think I'm missing the main one.
St. Louis Cardinals.
St. Louis Cardinals, yeah. So
and
I think
he actually
like AA or AAA.
Right, he was just in their farm systems, but he actually was right-handed, but he injured his arm throwing, and he got to where he was so good, he got to be ambidextrous and started using his left arm for throwing instead, because his right arm was injured. His last season was.
Did he wrestle under a mask in the off season?
He did wrestle under a mask, but I can't snap to what the name was. But yeah, he did do that.
It's a spider or something like that. I vaguely remember that.
Good.
I don't know. I don't know how I remember it.
He signed with World Wrestling Federation in 1985, and he was given managers including Bobby Heenan, Jimmy Hart, and Classy Freddie Blassie, and, of course, the beautiful Miss Elizabeth.
Well, actually, they weren't his managers. They were all – it was like a big bidding war. They were all like – free agent, and they had like – they were all there, and then they had like every – you know, Bobby – you know, they had everybody, and then they had Miss Elizabeth. Like, everybody was like – was Miss Elizabeth.
Yeah, with that.
And at the time, I mean, that's what it was. At the time, that was one of the most beautiful women in the world.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I mean, yeah, she was beautiful. I mean, she was all.
As far as women in wrestling goes, I mean, like, on the outside, I'd say that she's probably, I mean, maybe the most famous one. I don't know. I mean, maybe,
yeah.
You know, in later years, some of them became more famous, but there was something different and special about her.
One of the other
memories
I've had of him was on the Wrestling Classic. He wrestled a match with the Dynamite Kid.
It was like
the first time I'd ever seen a top rope suplex, a superplex. And that was actually the finish of the match. The Dynamite Kid hoisted him up for the suplex from the top, and the crowd just went ape. They landed, Randy hooks Dynamite's legs, and gets the pin after being suplexed.
Yeah, that's still one of my favorite finishes of all time. I wish people would bring it out more, you know,
yeah,
matches
so
or something
simple.
Like that. I mean, that was just an awesome finish. That was great.
Yeah, I remember basically jumping up and down on my couch all pissed off because I wanted Dynamite to win. I was like, oh, no.
And the injustice of that night, who did he go on to face in the finals, only to be...
The Junkyard Dog, wasn't it? The
Junkyard Dog. To the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah, they did. At least he got put over more as a... you know, I think he got put over a little more because he had to wrestle, like, a couple extra matches than he did.
Right.
And he had to wrestle Ricky Steamboat and... Dynamite Kid, Ivan Petusky, as Jesse Ventura would say, and then Junkyard Dog.
Well, he had one easy match. But that was, that was great. He was awesome. I just loved his robes. I mean, the way he had those, like, I guess those sticks kind of in the robe where it was just like a giant, I don't even know how to describe it, almost like one of those fancy ballroom gowns almost, but I mean just a more like a robe. I mean,
no, when he first came to the WWF and I first saw him work, it was amazing how much better he was than everybody else. He put a lot of those guys to shame because he was just, his work was just like out of this world compared to some people. I mean, they still had good workers, but I mean, his work was so different and everything. He just looked like he was so much better than everybody.
He was so much faster than everybody in the WWE because he had a lot of slow guys. He always had like big muscle dudes like Tusky and Morocco and Graham. And he was like the most different heel that they ever had, I mean, up to that point, because all the heels were the big monsters up to that point. And then here's a smaller guy who's believable because you actually believe he's fucking crazy.
You know, one of his first major feuds was in 85, when he feuded Tito Santana for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
And oddly enough,
in Garden in February of 86.
Yeah, oddly enough, the very first wrestling match I ever saw, I remember it vividly. It was on late on a Friday night, and my dad was teasing me for watching pro wrestling. Tito Santana was the very first wrestler I ever saw do a squash match, ever do any kind of a match. And Tito Santana was the very first one, and that was his first major feud.
And it also had one of the first cool finishes I saw where he had the object and he swings and misses. And he picks him up for the suplex, and then he nails him right in the face with the object and pins him.
Right, right. He picked him up for like a back suplex, as I remember.
Yeah,
that belly to back, and he hit him with the pipe or whatever it was, and 1, 2, 3.
Well, it was more like brass knuckles or something. But speaking, and then he also had one of the most memorable things that I remember. And mainly it's because of the super, super, super overacting by Ricky Steamboat, is when he came down with the bell.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, he came down, he had the ring bell, and he jumped off the top rope with the Axe Bomber, but with the bell, and came down on Steamboat, and Steamboat just grabbed his throat with both hands, and he flailed his legs up in the air, and he was gagging, and just made it look like he was going to die. You know, and then they came and stretched him out, and the whole time he's still grabbing his throat, and he's still, like, gagging, and, I mean, you talked about
Bruno Sammartino's backstage trying to get some word on him, and Savage comes up, and Bruno just goes, "You slime bag, you slime," and then he attacks him right there in the hallway.
I'll never forget the announcers saying, "I don't know what's the matter with him. I think he swallowed his tongue."
Oh, yeah.
That was like the first really hardcore angle I saw in WWF. I mean, that was some hardcore stuff.
Not to mention it's impossible to swallow your tongue unless it's cut off.
Okay, Mr. Medical Doctor here.
I'm just saying.
the skits that they had Steamboat in, when he had like some kind of kid speech therapy thing or something like that with kids that couldn't have speech problems, and he's learning how to retalk, and he can't say he says... And he can't do it.
He was getting frustrated and crying. And they had some bad acting back then.
Yeah. But let's talk about the match, because the match they had, I think up until the Steve Austin Bret Hart match, without a doubt to me, that's the greatest WrestleMania match of all time, as far as like work rate of a match.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it was just nonstop. I mean, and then it was different because look at how many, like, near falls they had. I mean, you didn't really see that in a WWE match, you know.
And it was really, really short. It was a pretty short match for, you know, how great it was.
Yeah.
It was, like, what, 13 minutes?
That sounds
good. They were just 100 miles an hour the whole time. I mean, it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a long match, but it's like you remember it as this long classic that went on for a long time, but in reality it didn't. But I mean, you talk about a match where everything was performed perfectly, you know, that's it. And I know they got like some practice because I think even Peach Machine had gone to one of the shows right before, one of the house shows right before, and they did the exact same match move for move. So I think Savage is like one of those guys who likes to plan every single thing, kind of like a, I guess, like DDP was kind of also known for doing that. But yeah, you know, they had that match just worked out perfectly. I mean, that's a 5-star match if ever there was one.
You know, I know a lot of you know the backstory, but I'll go ahead and give it anyway. But him and Ricky actually worked out the match move for move, and they would call spots and excuse me, and it was to the point where Savage would yell out a number and Steamboat would have to shout back to him what the transition and then the move that they were going to do, what spot they were going to do next. You know, Savage would say, like, you know, move 6, and then and Steamboat would go clothesline, drop down, whatever. None of this was called in the ring. It was totally worked out beforehand. But that's not the ideal way to do a match nowadays, and people frown upon it, and old workers would frown upon it. But Savage pulled out a classic by doing it that way.
Yeah, Steamboat always talked about, you know, like he'd go with two out of three falls match you'd have with Ric Flair. They knew the ending of the three falls, and they just called the rest of it, you know, out there while they were doing it for an hour.
Right.
I don't know. That's amazing. That still fascinates me about wrestling. That guy can go out there and do stuff like that, you know, and just call it in the ring.
I actually got to see Savage and Steamboat a couple of times, and the last time they rolled through, they would roll through Tacoma. They would come literally once a month. They were on a loop up here. And they would run through every, like, 6 weeks. They would come through. And I actually see Steamboat and Savage in a cage. Double Juice on a house show. Just, man, it was such an amazing show. I remember another time they ran through, it was, I can't remember the other team, but I know it was Strikeforce and Ricky Steamboat against Savage and the other, I want to say it was the Rougeaus in a cage, and it was kind of a nothing match, but I got to see Savage work live a lot.
That's cool. I only saw him work a couple times when they would come down. I didn't actually see him a whole lot, but let's go ahead and move over to another feud, and that's probably one of the most famous feuds of all time, and that's the one with that took a year. It was like a year in the making, and that was a feud between him and Hogan. And you pretty much knew it was coming from the very start, but, I mean, it was a very slow build. And, I mean, it's just phenomenal. I mean, it started off where, you know, he's being beat down, and Elizabeth has to go and get help. And I just remember, like, she's basically dragging Hulk Hogan out, and he's like, what's going on? What's happening? What's happening? And he sees what's going on, and he just gets that look in his eyes, like, oh, my God. And he has to run in there and go kick ass, and, you know, that's what started it off.
Oh, he was against the Honky Tonk Man.
The what?
And he was against the Honky Tonk Man, who was being triple-teamed by a Honky Tonk Man, like the Hart Foundation or something, and Honky pushed Elizabeth down.
Wasn't it like the Twin Towers?
Huh? No, the first time that Hogan and Savage got together on Saturday Night Main Event in, like, I think September of 87, when Savage had just turned babyface against Honky Tonk for the IC title. And
right.
They were Hart Foundation and Honky were triple-teaming Savage, and Elizabeth came in there, and that's when Savage, Honky Tonk Man, threw Elizabeth down to the ground, and then she left and came back with Hulk Hogan. That's when they first form the Mega Powers.
That sounds right. Speaking of, if you go to YouTube, type in Honky Tonk Man, you can see Roy Ferris, a.k.a. the Honky Tonk Man, talk about Savage's death. You can check that out on onewrestling.com, or you can find it on YouTube if you just type in Death of Macho Man and Honky Tonk Man.
I was so excited when Randy Savage turned babyface that first time, because everybody wanted to cheer the guy, you know, at that point. He just kind of like Ric Flair, you know, you just want to cheer for the guy.
It was just having to pitch off the matches, you know.
Yeah, and just, you know, just his personality and everything, that's the guy you want to get behind. So I thought it was awesome when he first turned babyface.
Yeah.
That the team of the Mega Powers, you know, him and Hulk Hogan, on that Saturday night's main event. Just, man, that was so cool when I was a kid. I just thought that was the neatest thing when they the Mega Powers united and they took on Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant. And
The best part of the whole thing was the handshake.
Yeah, the handshake at the end was the best.
Because Savage has that it's hard to explain. He just has this look in his eye I don't even know how to describe it. It's just like I don't know, like he's shaking a hand with an alien from outer space or something. I mean, the look on it, it's just like, you'll never see anything like that again. I mean, it was just incredible. And then, I mean, that was the greatest wrestling handshake of all time.
And that, of course, accumulated to the first ever SummerSlam pay-per-view event, the Mega Bucks against the Mega Powers. The Mega Bucks were Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant. And this is the SummerSlam of 1988. And Elizabeth, at the end, jumped up on the ring and gave me my first childhood moment when she took off her skirt and revealed a bikini briefs, and my little world was shaken for the rest of time.
My world wouldn't be shaken, knowing that was your first childhood moment.
Okay, I was 14, but hey.
Yeah, I mean, and at that time, that was, I guess, risque at the time.
Yeah,
of course,
exactly.
You know, years later, it's nothing, but now back to the G rating, now it's actually back to risque. But damn, she looked good, and that's where Hogan put her on his shoulder, and you just see the look on my. And that just, that's what he was great about, is these psychopathic looks where he's like, what the fuck, you know?
I mean, you could see something was going through his head, you know, something's up here, you know. He
made it seem real.
Yeah,
I mean, it was like real. He made it seem real, just the way he would look.
And it was mm-hmm. awesome the way that they built that up, because, I mean, it was a long time before the announcers even hinted that there was any trouble, like, with the Mega Powers. I mean, maybe 7 or 8 months, 8, 9, 10 months or something like that, you know, after they had gotten together. And, I mean, if it was on TV today, you know, they'd be back in the dressing room. They'd be showing them yelling at each other every fucking week or something like that. And you know somebody's going to turn. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was just the little subtle hints and everything. It was just so awesome.
And, of course, the WrestleMania 4 main event, actually main event, I shouldn't even say that, it was a 14-man tournament. And I didn't get the pay-per-views at the time because, you know, Dad hated wrestling, let's be honest. But read in the paper the next day that Hulk Hogan totally failed at winning the championship. And to find out that Macho Man had won the championship the next day, I was absolutely stunned.
Did you get the home video with the pop up box?
As a matter of fact, I did, and I think I still got it here somewhere. two VHS tapes, and you open the thing up, and Hogan's face popped out, much like one of your books when you were a kid.
Now going back to the feud. They had a very, like, newsworthy skit where even today people still call in and ask questions, because they had the skit backstage where Hogan had a black eye. And it was always wondered, people always wondered, how did he get the black eye? If Macho Man really hit him or what was going on?
He was in a wave runner accident?
Something like that, yeah. Well, that's what like Mike Graham said on Wrestling Observer Live on a show. And that's what a few people have said of what the story was. But it always comes up, and sometime in the next few months, someone's going to send that into the Dave Bryan show and ask, what happened to Hulk Hogan's eye? You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's just one of those great urban legends in pro wrestling.
Yeah. And
the other urban legend that Savage is known for, or...
We won't talk about that.
Yeah,
that's
sorry.
And then the feud also led to one of the best lines, and I might say it wrong, but where he said that Hogan had lust in his eye.
I think he did.
That
I'm pretty
was
sure
he had lust for Elizabeth. And she took, I mean, this may have been like our one of her only bumps. But during that tag match with the Twin Towers, when Savage got thrown out of the ring and landed on top of her, he fucking wiped her out.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the best bumps I've ever seen. I mean, it looked like she was dead. I was kind of killed with his acting backstage afterwards, crying, "Don't let her die, doctor. Don't let her die." All that crap.
Right. You know, after Savage won that title at WrestleMania 4, he actually held it over a year and didn't lose it till WrestleMania 5 when he dropped the title to Hogan in the Mega Powers Explode or the whatever. I can't remember what the title of WrestleMania 5 was, but Savage came off the top rope with his flying elbow and Hogan took the move, but then no-sold it immediately and pinned him in the middle of the ring at WrestleMania 5.
You know, even 300 at WrestleMania 4, I could tell that they were doing Hogan and Savage that next year. Even when I was,
right,
you know, just youngster, I could just see it.
When's the last time a champion had held the title for over a year? Maybe Cena? Like 3-4 years
Cena
ago?
Yeah, Cena had it for over a year. Cena had it for a long time.
And that was, like I said, maybe 3-4 years ago. So,
JBL.
Wrestling is... Okay.
No, not JBL. But, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. But after that, what did he do, like, after he after the Hogan feud?
After he dropped the title.
Sherry.
Yeah, after the title, he hooked up with Sherry, got rid of Elizabeth, and... The insanity that was him winning the King of the Ring, and then it was the Macho King and Queen Sherry.
I just remember the thing I remember from King Macho is when he went to hit the Ultimate Warrior with the scepter, and the scepter flew apart before he made contact with the Ultimate Warrior. That's one of the greatest things ever, and then Ultimate Warrior sold it.
He pulled the King gimmick off. I thought okay. He had a certain style, and the way he came off, he didn't look like Harley Race out there with just a stupid looking crown and this robe.
Right.
He actually had kind of a style to, you know, how he looked and stuff like that.
Just the simple fact that the crazed look in his eye to sell the gimmick that was the Macho King. I mean, you saw how ridiculous Sheamus looked as the King of the Ring.
Yeah,
and I think he was the real last King of the Ring that actually pulled off. Well, I can't say that because Booker T had an amazing run as King Booker, let's be honest. But the Macho King, you know, that really sold that whole
thing. Macho pulled it off, and I take him seriously. I had a hard time taking Booker seriously because he was just, I don't know, just kind of all goofy.
I know he wasn't serious, but come on, that made for some entertaining television.
Oh, yeah, it was entertaining.
With his gangsta talk, with the royal talk, when he mixed the two together, when he was the king of the world, just amazing.
Yeah,
but,
Booker was awesome.
Savage, you know, wearing the crown, and you know, he had a bunch of geeks carrying him out to the ring on the throne, and Sherry with her wacky makeup that went from her eyes well past her forehead, and
she was like one of the most unattractive hot women I ever saw. I mean, it's hard to explain because she wasn't pretty, but damn if I didn't want to fuck her when I was a kid.
Oh geez, Ed, why are you dragging her into the sewer like this?
Well, I mean, the truth, she was hot. I'm not saying anything. And, like, especially in the Ultimate Warrior Savage match, where that's a testament right there on how Randy Savage is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, because he pulled out a 5-star match out of the Ultimate Warrior. Mm-hmm. I mean, that match is just phenomenal. The first time I watched the match, I actually didn't really watch the match. I just heard it because I didn't actually buy the pay-per-view, but you can put it on the pay-per-view channel, and you could get the fuzzy picture, and you get, like, a clear picture, like, every few seconds.
Yeah.
So that's how I watched it, and I listened to the play-by-play. And I just remember I was on the edge of my seat just on that, man. I couldn't imagine actually watching a match live.
And the thing afterwards really put that, really added so much more to that match. thing with Elizabeth afterwards. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, when they were reunited.
Yeah.
Yeah, grown people crying in the stands, you know. I mean, that was that big moment.
I even like the finish of Ultimate Warrior just putting his foot on him. I don't know, there's something, like, you know, they just beat the crap out of each other, and, you know, he's got nothing left, so, you know, he just puts his foot on him. I just thought it was kind of, I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was cool.
But I just loved how it was like three devastating clotheslines. I mean, he killed Macho Man.
I thought the thing with kicking out of like five elbows was a bit absurd, but that's just me. When he kept throwing the top rope elbows on the Warrior.
Yeah.
You know, the guy was so horrible in the ring, and Savage and Hogan, for that matter, pulled a couple of classics out of the guy. Let's be honest. I mean, when you think about him and the good matches he's had, and I'm talking about Warrior here, there's only a couple. And Hogan got one, and Savage got one.
He had good matches with, like, Rude and DiBiase and Mr. Perfect, but, I mean, nothing level of those matches.
Yeah, and think about the caliber of worker you're talking about.
I know.
Yeah. And, you know, his squash with the Honky Tonk Man does not count.
But that was an awesome match, dude. I can't say it was an awesome match. It was just awesome that it happened.
Yeah,
okay.
It was.
I'll give you that.
He came running out. I mean, dude, I hated the fucking Honky Tonk Man so fucking bad. He was like, to me, he was like the worst fucking wrestler. It's like, I thought anybody could beat him, but for some reason, he always kept that goddamn title. And then the fucking Ultimate Warrior visit kicked, and he runs to the ring, all Ultimate Warrior jacked up, fucking going crazy, shaking the ropes, and then just fucks up the Honky Tonk Man and just fucking grabs the belt, runs around on celebrating, kicking the ropes again, and fucking takes off. I mean, it was fucking awesome.
And plus, he had the title for so long, it was kind of fitting that he lost it so quickly.
Yeah.
You know,
true.
I hear Craig kind of smirking at the thought of the Ultimate Warrior doing something great, but come on, Craig. There's a lot of people who are going to bash the Ultimate Warrior, but back then, you were a big Ultimate Warrior mark, and don't tell me you weren't.
I'm not going to say that there was a Halloween picture of, I would say, 1987, where there was a young Craig Prober with a small mullet, and Halloween of 1987 went to high school dressed as said Ultimate Warrior. Yeah, ain't gonna lie.
Cool. Well, that just proves my point. but that match, you know, the reuniting, which was a great moment, led to even also some other great big moments, because we just talked about them a couple weeks ago, but the wedding. I mean, who can forget the wedding and the wedding reception?
Yeah.
You know,
that was in 91, I want to say. And, goodness. Was he, I can't remember if he held the title at the time or not.
He was retired.
He was still retired.
He was retired because he lost to the Ultimate Warrior.
And
okay.
This was the angle to start to bring him back.
Okay.
Yeah. So they had the wedding, and
it
kind of
sucked that
you had to wait
for TV to see this. You know, it didn't happen on the pay-per-view. But
Katrina, you weren't on this show, but tell me the best part of that whole wedding. Was it Bobby Heenan shaking his head just repeatedly, and just he came here and looked at the Macho Man. All he could do is shake his head.
David says, "Show this man the exit."
It's awesome. Sorry for you too, Bobby. And then that's probably the most lines Elizabeth ever had in her career. She probably spoke in that one skit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just love the angle where they show the Cobra up close and they show the Cobra striking at the camera. Oh man.
That was just like a stroke of genius, like putting a snake in the box, you know.
Right.
That was just perfect. And Jake Roberts, he's been so long being a babyface. I forgot how awesome a heel he could be. I mean, he was an awesome heel at that time.
Not to mention, this was the time where the WWF got two pay-per-view buys out of me at one time when they did Survivor Series.
Yeah.
And then the following Tuesday.
Tuesday night in Texas.
The Tuesday night in Texas. Thank you, WWE, for milking my wallet. Two pay-per-views in less than a week.
You
can
talk about pay-per-view. I had to pay for park. Well, I don't think I paid for parking, but I had to pay for the ticket to get there and my sodas and my hot dogs, and they got some money off of me that day. That's actually where Shawn Michaels drew Marty Jannetty through the barbershop. They filmed that that night. And stuff.
And they didn't air it till like halfway through January of like 92, like the couple months later. I just remember
it was amazing
most awesome thing. The snake gnawing on his arm was like one of the greatest visuals I've ever seen, and I'm still shocked that I even saw that something like that actually happened in a wrestling ring. I don't know.
And as I remember, it was like totally unplanned, as I remember, wasn't it?
They
had no idea
for himself.
That's right, and the WWF at the time, you know, they tried to clean it up by putting a large red X on the screen. So you could see what was going on, but we don't want you to see this, you know. But they did, and oh goodness,
that was
phenomenal.
Like, and it wasn't like a boa constrictor or a python. It was a fucking like king cobra. So I mean,
yeah,
I mean one of those big ones.
Yeah, I mean it was
really
big, venomized or whatever. But I mean, fuck, dude, you just see the blood. It's like I know wrestling is fake, but. That fucking snake is biting him, man. That's fucking, you know. That's one of those moments where you're like, what the fuck?
And that was just so shocking at the time. I don't know, I wasn't like an insider fan then, so I don't know if there's like a lot of outrage or anything about that, but I just thought it was awesome. It was so fucking cool.
The spot where Jake the Snake, I can't remember. I think it was at the Tuesday in Texas, or it was at the Saturday night's main event, where Jake actually slapped Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. That was
oh,
the Tuesday
heat. Day. Oh, the heat. Good night.
Nobody ever hit Elizabeth before.
No, nobody hit Elizabeth except Macho Man, but that's another story.
Nobody ever
anyway.
Faced in WWF at that point.
Oh,
yeah,
man,
was,
the heat there.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know Lawler had punched Rick Boone's girlfriend in Memphis, and I'm sure it was, like, in Texas. They might have smacked the sunshine around or whatever, but as far as like big national, I mean, that was the biggest thing, you know. I mean, that's the most people saw that, so of course people remember that.
It was Elizabeth. You can't hit Elizabeth.
Yeah.
That's right. She's a real lady.
She's not like
good old Wikipedia has also said that on the February 8th edition, is in 1992, the February 8th, 1992 episode of Saturday Night's Main Event. Roberts was planning a backstage ambush of Savage and Elizabeth after losing the match, but was stopped by The Undertaker.
Yeah, The Undertaker's babyface turn. That's pretty cool. Because The Undertaker's another guy like Savage. Everybody wanted to cheer him. Everybody was cheering him already. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I just remember they finalized it when he like got his hand stuck in the coffin, and then Jake just humanized him with the chair over and over and over again. That was pretty good. And then one thing that I really, I don't know, for some reason I just never got, I know why I didn't get into it, because I was such a Ric Flair mark and I knew that he wasn't going to go over against Savage. Maybe that's why I didn't like the dude as much, but, you know, they did the big thing where they tried to make it look like Flair was actually trying to have an affair with Savage. I mean, Miss Elizabeth.
That would have been something. That'd been a
that would have been some rage right there.
that would have been groundbreaking. That's for sure.
But they had, you know, Ric Flair had the photoshops of him, with hanging out at the pool and making Randy slowly get jealous. And then I think they kind of stopped it or cut back on it because Randy actually was getting pissed off about it. He didn't actually like the angle.
Yeah, because they actually separated, you know, in quote-unquote real life right after this feud got done with.
I remember reading an article in the WWF magazine And it was, they just had this, like, this one-page thing, like, an announcement that they were, had gotten divorced. It was weird.
Yeah, that feud with Flair was so good. I really liked that feud. And ended at WrestleMania 8 when Savage won the title from Ric Flair.
And that's where
I bet Savage has already got Elizabeth locked up in a closet somewhere in the sky. It's terrible.
That is terrible to say. Yes.
Well, it was this story back then, so you know, might as well go with it. I apologize.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that is a secret. I mean, he was pretty overprotective of her, and I know he. There were real actual problems with him and Hogan, not because there were actually problems between him and Hogan, but because he didn't like Elizabeth hanging out with, what the hell is Hogan's wife's name?
Linda.
Linda, yeah, you know. She didn't like, because Linda is, you know, party girl or whatever, you know, and, you know, living a lavish lifestyle, you know, and that caused him some problems. But he was very overprotective. I mean, it's no secret that he would lock her in a dressing room back in the day. And, you know, I'm not into hitting women, but if I had a woman like Elizabeth, I think I'd want to keep her, you know, to myself.
Okay. Yeah. And soon after winning the title, he went on to form a tag team with the Ultimate Warriors, known as the Ultimate Maniacs. And... they had a feud with Money, Inc. And let's see here. Tag team match, Survivor Series 92. Bobby Heenan was out there. And sorry, I'm paraphrasing. Flair
got fired.
Yeah. And Flair ended up attacking Savage and hitting him in the knee, causing him to lose the match.
Yeah. And what was his last angle in the WWE?
With Crush, maybe?
That sounds about right. Next thing on Wikipedia, it goes on to say, you know, Monday Night Raw began in January of 93, and he occasionally wrestled Doink, Repo Man, Rick Martel, Crush. Was a runner-up in the Royal Rumble match in 93 and was eliminated by Yokozuna. Returned for pay-per-view at Survivor Series 93 against substituting for Mr. Perfect. And pretty much he was done in 94. Vince McMahon on an on-air farewell speech November 7th of 1994 wished him well on a Monday Night Raw edition.
Speaking of being wished well, they just fired Terry Taylor from TNA.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
They snuck to the rooster.
Oh, wow. Alice in Chains reference on this show, everybody. 1994, he ended up in World Championship Wrestling and debuted on WCW Saturday Night prior to Starrcade 94. Savage made reference to the love-hate relationship he and Hulk Hogan had. Then the WCW World Champion, who was Hulk Hogan, by the way, for four weeks, the announcer speculated that Savage would arrive and shake Hogan's hand or slap his face. Savage eventually saved Hogan from an attack by three of the Faces of Fear, shaking hands with his friend and rival. His WCW feud against the Avalanche at Super Brawl 5. He teamed up with Sting and took on Avalanche and Big Bob Rogers in a tag team match, which Sting and Savage won. Goes on to say he participated in WCW United States Heavyweight Championship Tournament against Vader. I've got to go back and find that match. I'm sure it was awesome. He then went on to face the Butcher in the first round and stunning Steve Austin in the quarterfinals He interfered in Flair's match against Alec Wright, attacking Flair and causing Wright to get the disqualification to set up a tournament semifinals where he would face the winner of Sting and Ming.
Never happened. I think he jumped him before the bell and chased him out of the building, if I remember correctly.
And that was at the Great American Bash in 1995. Savage and Flair's tournament semifinal never took place due to Savage brawling backstage with Flair prior to the match and both getting them both eliminated.
Yeah, because remember Ric Flair, they'd had that tag team match with Hogan and Savage. They beat Flair and Vader, and then Flair put Angelo Poffo in the figure four.
Mm-hmm.
His trainer, by the way.
Speaking of his dad, let me bring this up about his dad. His dad, and I don't know, I can't remember the exact number, but his dad was in the Guinness Book of World Records for both sit-ups.
Sit-ups, yeah.
Yeah, sit-ups. Do you remember the name, the number, sure? And he used to wear it on his ring jacket to the ring all the time.
Yeah, he had a T-shirt made that he always wore that had the number on there. It was over 1,000. I'm not sure of the number.
Wow. It was a shitload, and he had it for a very, very long time. So that was one tough dude because I don't know if I could do 20 sit-ups right now. But, you know, unless I'm blind, somebody didn't plug our show on the Daily Update.
I'm sure it'll be fine. I
had a bunch of other stuff to put in there today.
I thought it'd be fine when I put up
an ass in Vegas.
Well, our good buddies over at Angry Mark plugged the show, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. Oh, well. At least hopefully I'll get one on Monday or Tuesday. I totally forgot to plug the other show, last week's show. But anyway, let's go back to the Macho Man here. Great.
6,033 sit-ups. I just got a text message. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I guess he got that from Stevie because he promised he wasn't going to text me anymore during the show.
Thanks, Stevie.
But 6,000 fucking sit-ups. I mean, how the fuck does... Why would you want to do 6,000 sit-ups?
I don't know.
I mean, how the fuck do you discover that talent? That's just like... I don't know. But his dad was a tough old wrestler back in the day. I just seen like bits and clips of him. I never seen like a whole match, but his dad was a pretty tough guy. And I guess we should talk about this too, because I mean, it's actually a big story. Is in the early 80s, way before he got to WWE, his dad and his brother, they ran their own territory, and they actually ran against Memphis. What was the name of the territory, Katrina?
ICW.
So they had it's like if you win a wrestle there, you got blackballed. So nobody else really wanted to use the Macho Man. Bob Orton was there for a while. Bob Roop,
Ronnie Garvin
guys.
Was there.
Yeah, Ronnie Garvin. And they were always talking shit about Jerry Lawler and Memphis. And I don't know if like Lawler them responded. I think they kind of played it low key and didn't. But it got so bad that Randy Savage jumped Superstar Bill Dundee. I don't know where he jumped him at, but he jumped him and broke his jaw.
Well,
you know,
Bill Dundee had pulled a gun on him, and Savage took the gun away and then broke his jaw.
I mean, it was so bad, even Lance Russell carried a gun because it was so bad. You know, it's hard to imagine Lance Russell carrying a gun, but yeah. And then, you know, it is the South, so, I mean, they are crazy to begin with, but... Yeah, I mean, it was one of the nastiest feuds, like, promotional wars ever. I mean, it was big-time dirty. I mean, they would go outside the arena and, like, go to the shows and challenge them to fights. And, I mean, just, it was dirty shit. And then, finally, I guess, they ended up going under because Memphis was the main promotion. And then they actually worked, you know, together where they actually feuded the King and Randy Savage.
Yeah,
and
go back in the you can go to YouTube and like type in like Randy Savage Memphis, and it'll have the angle where he showed up as like outsider and invader. Mm-hmm. And that's an awesome clip they got up there. They don't know what's going on. Randy Savage, he just showed up. He doesn't work here. Anything like that is awesome.
Savage won his first WCW World Heavyweight Championship by winning the first ever 60-man three-ring battle royal. He lost the title to Flair a month later at Starrcade 95, the World Cup of Wrestling, and that's the one I referred to earlier. Earlier in the night, he defeated Tenzon. Savage won his second World Heavyweight Championship back from Flair in January of 1996 on Nitro. As I remember, the match with Flair and Savage from the Starrcade 95, there was a spot where Flair went into the post, and Savage actually gigged Flair. He didn't gig himself. He gigged Flair, and that man bled like crazy. You've all seen Ric Flair bleed. I know you have. But to see him bleed in 95, I swear he cut him ear to ear and just buckets raining down from Flair. And if you're going to have somebody cut you, I would suggest not New Jack and not Randy Savage.
Well, I'm sure Ric Flair didn't care, but hell no, I wouldn't let him fucking touch me. Like I say, he always looked like he was high on coke.
Or Abdullah. You might get hit.
Yeah, very true. 1997, he ended up joining the NWO after Super Brawl 7. He helped Hogan defeat Roddy Piper in their match at Starrcade and reunited with Miss Elizabeth and began feuding with Diamond Dallas Page and his wife, Kimberly.
Yeah, he brought out the Playboy with Kimberly in it. I had that issue.
The best thing about his WCW run was, God damn it, I just lost my train of thought. go ahead, Craig. Go ahead. I'll see if I can remember it.
Oh, geez.
I remember. The best thing is when he hurt his arm. Remember when his arm was hurt? And they mostly reported in the Wrestling Observer that his arm was hurt. And Hulk Hogan came out and burned the Wrestling Observer and said, his arm's not hurt. And then he goes and he loses by, like, an arm submission.
Yeah.
Because his arm was tiny compared to the other one.
Right. His final run in WCW is with Team Madness. It was Medusa and Miss Madness began fighting each other over over who was responsible for Savage's title loss.
Is it one of Molly Holly part of the group too?
Yeah, she was Miss Madness.
That's right. Savage soon fired both of them and started a feud with the one and only Dennis Rodman, with him debuting at Road Wild in the worst wrestling match I think I've ever seen. Savage made an appearance on Thunder May 3rd, 2000, where he participated in a 41-man battle royal for a shot at the Great American Bash. Savage would not be seen by wrestling fans for 5 years after this night.
That's a long time.
His last appearances were in TNA.
Yes, that was in 2004. Savage made his return at Victory Road, confronting Jeff Jarrett. At Turning Point, he teamed up with Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles to defeat the Kings of Wrestling, not the real ones, by the way, in the main event for Final Resolution 2005. It was scheduled to be Jeff Jarrett and Randy Savage for the NWA title. Savage's plan was to win it, the title, and drop it back to Jarrett at the next pay-per-view in December, but Savage left TNA over a disagreement on the finish for the next scheduled pay-per-view. And that's pretty much the last time we saw him.
Well, the last time
he showed
up
when Hulk Hogan was there one time and pulled a knife on him.
Goodness.
That's right. I remember that story.
Oh, wrestling.
I'm expecting that to be in the Hall of Fame next year.
Seeing how it's in Florida, I would be stunned if they didn't put him in.
Yeah.
And
it kind of sucked because we never got to see him again, like, somewhere that mattered, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, back in the WWF or WWE. It's kind of, I don't know, it's just, he's just one of those guys you never got to see again, and he was, like, one of the biggest stars.
Yeah, like, one of the last things he did was, one of the last things he did was the rap album. That kind of made news, you know. The,
Be a Man, Hulk. Be a Man. That didn't matter, and that was horrible.
It was.
It was awesome. What the hell are y'all talking about? That's the greatest rest of all time.
Oh, goodness. Apparently, I missed this one. He was in the, he was also did an animated series, Dexter's Laboratory, Space Ghost Coast to Coast, King of the Hill, Duff Dodgers, Bolt, and Family Guy.
Wow.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
We lost a good one today.
But shit, we lost one of the, like I say, one of the top five guys of the 80s and the early 90s. I mean, he's just, you know, he's just going to remember, he's going to remember. I mean, hopefully they will put him in the Hall of Fame finally, you know, and, you know, Vince will, you know, be cool about it. I mean, they, you know, people, some people say, oh, well, they put out the DVD. Yeah, they put out a DVD where they didn't even talk to him or there's no documentary part of it. I mean, how many DVDs do they put out that don't have a documentary part to it, you know? It was basically just matches, you know? So hopefully, you know, we won't get into that whole story, but hopefully they'll work that stuff out, you know, and put them in the Hall of Fame. And I think they're supposed to do a tribute to them Sunday, so let's see what they do on Sunday, you know. Maybe they'll put something together, you know, really, really nice.
I would imagine they'll do a graphic, you know, before Raw, and hopefully they'll do one at the pay-per-view as well.
They'll still get criticized for it. I mean, if they do a tribute, there's going to be outcry about them. You know, I don't know what you could say, but there will be some kind of outcry. You know, people will be bitching, you know, about it. And if they don't, then they'll bitch about that. So either way, there's going to be a lot of bitching on the Internet about it.
Yeah, you're probably right, unfortunately.
Yeah. But we got 18 minutes left. So let me go ahead and drop the plugs already. Everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows. And go ahead, sure.
I don't have any plugs this week.
Okay.
We were supposed to have Michael Elgin on the show this week from ROH, and he was having some trouble getting home from wherever he was, so we're going to reschedule him. We'll probably have to do a Thursday night edition very soon. So hopefully Elgin got home. I know he's taking on Homicide tonight at the ROH shows. Should be a good one. Elgin actually got to wrestle X-Pac last weekend, and really looking forward to talking to him about that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And ROH
would
made their big announcement by then, huh?
Announcement.
I bet they're shutting down. It's over.
No, I
know it is.
So.
That Feinstein thing, they never came back from that.
I got to meet Mr. Feinstein this last WrestleMania weekend at one of the Dragon Gate shows.
Oh, it's a Dragon Gate.
He had a gimmick table set up. Oddly enough, he wasn't selling little boys. But anyway, couldn't have been nicer, I'll be honest with you. Of course, I did look good that night, I'll be honest. But so we'll have Elgin on the show also coming up in the next few weeks, Disco Inferno, and we will be off next week because of the big F4W convention down in Vegas. Ed, please behave yourself.
But not this year. I do have access to a voice recorder, so I will get down a little audio for like we can add to the show like we did for the WrestleMania show. So I will get some stuff going on for Vegas. I'm not gonna promise a whole lot. It's probably gonna be crazy. So I mean,
I'm sure.
Brian asked for a list of people going, and it came out to 60 if you add the, you know, like the friends that are going. And I even forgot. I forgot Brandon Draven. So Apologies to Brandon Draven. I know he listens to the show, so he's driving up from LA. He's bringing ice chests, like a couple or two or three ice chests, so we can fill up one with beer and then the other one with ice to drink. Because last year we ran out of ice, and poor Dave Meltzer had to drink tap water with no ice in it last year. Mm. So we're going to avoid that situation. So Brandon's going to save us off. Forgot to put you on the list of 60 that they read last night. And I'm sure there's probably another two or three people that I just didn't feel like going through the whole thread. So they're the ones that I remember off the top of my head. But
you're going to have a big SmackDown viewing party with Dave like you did last year?
If the hotel gets sci-fi, but then again, I guess we could just watch it on the computer. And there's also a dream show that night, just like last year. So I might have to kick Dave Meltzer out at the end of the night, you know.
Now, are you going to UFC?
Yeah, I'm going to UFC. I was shout out to Doc G for he's the one that I'm in his block, so he scored the tickets. So we just got the cheap ones. Last year we were the last row, and this year we're a couple rows ahead of it. But you know, they got plenty of screens, so it's not bad. I mean, unless you're right up front, you're looking at the screens anyway, no matter where you're at. So you know,
true.
So. That's cool. I, of course,
will be attending Over the Limit this weekend with Brian and Whitney and my son Cameron going to his first WWE show, and he's very excited. He's going to be disappointed when he sees that our seats are not front row like for TNA just a few months ago. But
people actually go to WWE shows, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, you're still getting comps, right?
No, Brian wanted us to get four tickets in a row because he could only score two comps, so he wants to sit with Cameron. That's probably not me, because Cameron's a lot of fun.
I'm hoping there's that two-ticket comp rule, because I actually asked for three, and I got three comps, but I was in the freaking nosebleeds for Raw. You know, Lance Storm was trolling my picture saying that I took it from the lightning grid.
Oh, you went to Raw all day?
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, I've been so much better, but I will say that was one of the longest let's go Cena, fuck you Cena chants that I've ever heard. That fucking thing just went on, and it wouldn't die, dude. It just kept going. And at one spot, there was a big move, so everyone cheered, but then it was boom, right back to it. You know, I think Brian said they went commercial and came back, and they were still doing it. I mean... That was cool. That was really cool. But I mean, it wasn't the best Raw, but it was okay.
Yeah, my son's very excited to see Sin Cara, and of course Rey Mysterio after today's festivities, and he's a John Cena fan, so we'll be interested to. I'm going to sit him next to Whitney because she loves Santino, and I don't even think he's on the show, to be honest with you, but. Anyway, it's going to be fun. I'm excited to check out the show this weekend, and I think we're about 13 rows up in the first section of bleachers, so we'll have good seats. And I could have scored third row off of Ticketmaster, but I wasn't dropping $275 to sit in the third row and take a chair home with me. So
watch Over the Limit.
The Limit. If Mania tickets were $275, no problem, but not for Over the Limit.
Yeah. And I actually get to see the pay-per-view because I'm on vacation for 2 weeks. I don't have to go into work on Sunday. So that's awesome. I can't believe it. It's like a dream come true, 2 weeks off, man. No killing myself every night in fucking boxes, but that's going to be awesome. But going back to the Vegas thing, I need to send out some more shout-outs, so... Of course, got a shout out to Highlight, who's always set us up for everything. He totally set up the dinner by himself, basically. Where we got 47 people going. We have our own private banquet room. We have our own buffet with baby back ribs, chicken, and pot roast, and a whole bunch of other shit. And then of course we got the suite, which is my suite, by the way. And with a big ass 420 balcony. Get the irony, 420.
I see what you did.
Yeah, so it'll be a good old time. I'm going to tell Dave, so Dave, I know you're not an anti-pot guy, so you want to come smoke this joint?
And he will, of course, say no.
You just asked Dave Meltzer to come smoke dope.
I'm kind of thinking about it.
I still haven't got an answer. Granny still hasn't answered my question about what does she think of Ed's drug use that I put on the board. I put up there, what do you think of Ed's drug use, and do you think his bad spelling is a cry for help?
Oh,
you quit,
man,
putting kill day bangs and things when people die.
Yeah,
somebody
exactly.
Called you out again today on that.
I didn't put it on Facebook. I only did it on the thread.
That's no good.
Only Rover would remember it anyway. Of course, he's the first person who fucking saw it. 2 seconds after I posted, there's Rover reminding me about that. Oh, I'm supposed to have it. I can't help it. It's a sickness, dude.
He learned nothing from
Adam's Firestorm. I was just reading the description in the description of this show.
Dude, I was so stoned.
Talk about
the
good times with Randy and Elizabeth and the bad, and right after it has a Teal Day bang on it. Right in the middle of this thing.
I had been low on my throw and I was conservative. I was, not smoking that much the last few days, and I got a new batch, mm-hmm. and I just got lit. And then I found out about this. And then I had to write that, and that's one of the worst intro things I've ever did. I mean, the spelling is even 10 times worse than normal. So
they really need a spell check thing on the board.
Well, maybe
I'm
if Katrin would start doing the things.
You know when there's a red line under, like, something that you're typing?
For sure.
I haven't seen a red line.
Right-click on that, and it'll give you the correct word.
Well, it's not on my Internet Explorer. It might be on my Firefox. I'll check it out.
It says we'll talk about Randy Savage winning the WWE World Title in the year long build to one of the greatest feuds of all time. YOUR.
Unbelievable.
Fuse is AUS.
Well, actually, I also have problems. I have problems with my keyboard. It kind of like sometimes pauses, so it even makes my spelling even worse than it already is.
Yeah, it's
not
you typing
being
the keyboard.
No, I'm not denying that I'm a bad speller, but my keyboard is kind of fucked up.
Don't eat over your keyboard. I'm a horrible speller. I'll be honest. So, and it's all me. It ain't my keyboard. It's just not paying attention in school.
If you wouldn't watch porn at your computer, your keyboard wouldn't be so sticky.
Oh, jeez.
And nowadays, I watch porn on my Droid.
I watch it on my iPhone.
Well, this is a great way to end up a tribute show.
I found a site where you can watch fucking whole movies on your fucking phone. It's crazy. But, yeah, let's go back to the show. I got one more thing about Vegas because it involves my former co-host, the Peach Machine, is having a wedding reception Sunday night at the fucking Venetian. It was an open bar, so that's for sure going to be a fun time. And the guy who scored me the crappy seats back for Raw this past week is going to be there, so... Maybe there'll be a few other surprises there. And if I take my wish recorder, maybe I can get an interview or two. But we'll see what happens. So we'll definitely have some audio, even though we probably won't have a show. But for sure, we'll be back in 2 weeks. So any final thoughts, Craig?
Sad day, but glad I got to spend it with my son. I'll leave it at that.
So, Katrin?
No, I'm fixing to go eat.
And I'm fixing to go to a party. Unfortunately, I got dragged to the other side of town, but it should be a cool party. And we will talk to everybody next week. All right, 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
Determination, what ability, high flyer, he does it all.